everyone. It's wonderful to have you with us today. I'm Henrik from Sweden. Thank you for tuning in and for spending some time with us today. If you are new to the show, this is an alternative, independent radio program, part of an emerging new right branch of metapolitics and politics with focus on heritage, culture, and tradition, a reaction to the modern world, something that is much more difficult to pin down within the old left-right political spectrum. RedIceCreations.com is our website. You can hear three new shows a week, and also don't miss our upcoming live stream, Red Ice TV, next Saturday, April 30th. This is on Valpurgis Night. We are going to have guests, callers, and much more. We are celebrating that Red Ice Radio is turning 10 years now in April, a decade of this radio program. We are going to start up the stream at 10 p.m. Central European Time and 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific U.S. Time, and 6 a.m., sorry guys, the following morning, Sunday, May 1st, for our Australian audience that are on Australian Eastern Time. RedIceMembers.com/live is the page for members, and our new website will be ready soon, and then we'll present the live page to you where we'll have much more information about the upcoming event. But today on the program, we are talking with a few gentlemen from the Nordic Resistance Movement from the Swedish branch called Nordfront, or Nordic Front. Stay tuned. I'll let them introduce themselves. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you so much for coming on with us today. It's great to have you all here. Let's, say hi and welcome to you guys one at a time here so our audience can hear who's who. We have with us today then on the line, Per Öberg. Welcome, Per.
Hi. Thanks.
Very good to have you with us. We also have Robin Palmblad. Good to speak with you again, Robin.
It's good to speak with you also.
And, of course, Emil Hogberg. Thank you for coming on, Emil.
You're welcome.
All right, there we go. Well, before we talk a bit more about Nordfront, let me just, quickly we can do some introductions here. Maybe you can tell us about yourself a little bit. Usually when we have one guest at a time, we might spend quite a bit of time on this alone, asking how people basically ended up where they are today and how you came to join Nordfront and all that. But if you can, give us a short outline of how you came to join the organization and your waking up, if you will. Maybe we can begin with you, Per. What's your background story?
I was a member of the organization quite late, 2001. I got a member of the organization. But I have been active openly for radical national movements before. So, and I actually got the question around some years before to join the Nordic Resistance Movement. I wasn't ready then, so it was 2001. But since 1987, I think, I have been openly working for the more radical branch of the movement. And the reason I joined the Nordic Resistance Movement is because I think it was the only movement in Sweden that fits my political views. And that's the only movement who was serious about their national socialism.
All right, very good. Well, we can we'll definitely talk a bit more about what Nordfront what it is and what it does and everything else. So that'll be interesting. But let's go over to you, Robin. What's your backstory?
I was born in Malmö in 1984, and I went to very multicultural schools, and that was what woke me up. And in the beginning, you weren't so aware about the current situation in the world, but over time, you read more and more nationalistic literature and such, and then you started to investigate the Second World War, and then you realized the hollow hoax, and that led to me joining the Nordic Resistance Movement in 2012. But I first became active in the year 2000, so that's about 16 years of nationalistic struggle, and these days it's national socialist struggle, because I think that national socialism is the ideology that fits me best. I believe in it, and the media calls everyone who doesn't agree Nazis anyway, so and we have to fight these powers anyhow, so that's about it.
Yeah, I'll ask you a bit more about that later, by the way. But let's get Emil's background story as well.
I am actually in the same age as Robin, and actually I joined the Nordic Resistance Movement the year 2000 or 2001. I was raised in the capital of Sweden, Stockholm, and I had similar upbringings like Robin. I also faced the ordinary multicultural life in Stockholm. And just like Robin, I didn't know anything about the Jewish questions and so on. But once you started to learn more and more, it made a more clear perspective. And then I joined the Nordic Resistance Movement. So that's about that.
All right. Well, let's. I want to switch over to you, Robin, and just ask you a bit about that, though. I mean, it's and I get all of you your takes on this too, but it's quite a leap to take, right? I mean, obviously, to just start investigating the Second World War, kind of daring to go there and just doing that. Most people stay away from it. They run, of course, in the opposite direction, screaming in most regards. Let me ask you, Robin, what attracted you to just kind of investigate that or even just looking into it?
Yeah, it was a book called The Holocaust Reviewed or something. It was written of Jürgen Graf. It's a famous book. I can give you a link to it. And when I read that, I first was very skeptical. But then my skepticism turned into anger when I realized that it was a hoax, that they have tested those gas chambers and there's no residue of the gas on the walls. And after that, I investigated it even more, and I wrote this big article called The Holocaust is a Hoax at Nordfront, and just kept on pounding and researching the subject more and more. And then you realize that the number 6 million is also connected to Jewish religion. It's a prophecy that forecast that before the Jews can create their homeland, the number 6 will be missing.
Yeah, it's like their little occult. I mean, they've been pushing that since late or mid 1800s, I believe.
Yes, they first accused the Russian government of it, and there's actually an article from 1906 published that. It's in New York Times, and it's in their official archives, that claims that the exact number of 6 million Jews face extermination, systematic extermination from the Russian government. So they have been pushing this figure a long time, and I think that's because the Zionists, the movement for bringing up a Jewish homeland, they tried to mobilize the world Jewry by pointing to this prophecy, so to get the ordinary Jews on the train to create the State of Israel, which was, of course, created in 1948 after the Second World War.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. But did someone like just hand you the book? How did you come across it? Did you know about any of this before?
Well, I made contact with nationalists in the south of Sweden, and there they sold literature, and that's how I came in contact with the revisionist material, so to say. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a very important topic because any white people that opposes multiculturalism is always blamed of, oh, you're inciting a new Holocaust. So from the pro-white perspective, it's important not to escape the issue of the Holocaust, but we must expose that the Germans is not guilty of this. And when we do that, people will break free of their, so to say, break out of their mental jail, to say.
Yeah, that's right. Pat, let me ask you the same question. Was it like, did someone introduce you to some of the ideas of what National Socialism actually was in Germany, or how did you come across some of that work?
It was really a coincidence. I was nationalistic thinking and more, you know, the music and a little subcultural thing, nationalistic thing when I was 15 or 16. But I worked after I have made my school, elementary school, I think you call it in the United States, I don't know. But after that I worked for 1 year, and one of my colleagues was one of the founder of VAM, White Aryan Resistance in Sweden. Actually, my boss asked me, do you want me to hire another nationalist person? He's from Stockholm and he's placed here because he had done some crime in Stockholm and so on. And that way he went my colleague, and he talked a lot about this, and he introduced me for a lot of books and so on.
That was back in, like, what, the mid-90s, early 90s, maybe? Before pre-internet space?
Yeah, this was actually on the 80s, 1986,
right. All right.
Something like this.
Right.
So he introduced me to some books and some other stuff, and made me understand this Jewish problem. Of course, they was inspired by the order in the United States, Bruderschweigen.
All right. Well, yeah, there's a couple more things I want to ask you guys, you know, kind of pertaining to that. But before, let's just kind of give an introduction as well to the organization that you guys are part of. You guys had me on your radio show. You do a radio show, I believe, once a week. And, of course, you have a website set up, which is the main outlet for, you know, your organization and the work you're doing. But how would you introduce any one of you that want to pick up on this? But how would you introduce this to anybody who's never heard about it before, or maybe if they've heard anything, they've seen something in the mainstream press or something like that? What should they know?
Well, we are a National Socialist organization, and we actually exist in Sweden, Denmark, and Finland. And we, our aim is to also exist on Iceland and in Denmark. And we focus mostly on activism, not so much in the parliamentary bit, but we do also have a party. So the next election, people will be able to vote on our organization. But our backbone, so to say, it's the activist organization. And I dare to say that we are quite open with our beliefs, and we don't take cover in the streets or something. So we are openly National Socialist, and we are in the streets, and we promote our views. So because of this, we often end up in confrontation with our political and actually racial enemies. So there have been a lot of headlines around our organization, and we are, I would like to say, the political boogeyman in the established media.
And to clear things up, our organization's name is the Nordic Resistance Movement, and our webpage name is Nordfront, North Front.
All right. And of course, our podcast is then
Radio North Front. Radio North Front.
Yeah, Nordfront.se, it's the Swedish branch of the organization. The other branches got their individual web pages as well.
And actually, I don't know, maybe you guys know, don't we have some short information in English as well on Nordfront?
Yes, we have.
And we are, I don't want to promise too much, but I believe that we have plans to actually launch an English site.
We can.
Hopefully this year, but not for certain.
We can promise that.
Yeah, but not the time, not the time.
Right, right.
Yeah. There is a translation of our 9 points from our party program that anyone can read. Just go to Nordfront.se and click on the English flag, and then you scroll down and read the 9 points here. And there you got them.
Are those long? Can someone just go with those for us?
Yeah, they're pretty long, but I can summarize them.
Perfect.
Number one, immediately stop mass immigration and as soon as possible initiate the repatriation of the majority of peoples that are not of Northern European descent. These should, in the most humane way possible, be sent back to their respective homelands or regions nearby. Two, with all means possible, work towards reconquering power from the global Zionist elite that by force and finance occupy a large part of our world. Three, create a Nordic self-sufficient state with a common military, common currency and a central bank, as well as a common overarching laws, membership in the European Union and other similar hostile associations will immediately be terminated. Four, create a powerful state with strong involvement and influence from the people. Important positions should be assigned after competence, and the goal of the state should be to work for the people's welfare and survival. The state will have an extensive freedom of speech. Five, Nordic mass media shall be owned exclusively by citizens of the New North. Domestic as well as foreign media that act and behave hostile towards the Nordic people shall be banned, and all too concentrated ownership shall be counteracted. Six, create a modern society in harmony with the natural order. Laws regulating animal welfare and protection shall be extensive, and prioritize ethics over profits. Nature and natural resources shall be used wisely, keeping the future in mind. The freedom to roam or every man's right shall be protected. 7. Establish a national socialist society where the distribution of resources should be done with the entire population in mind, the strong as well as the weak. Every citizen shall have the opportunity to reach and fulfill their full potential. Social security will provide citizens with both rights and obligations. Basic infrastructure should be owned and controlled by the state. Business life and innovative spirit shall be encouraged. 8. Introduce national conscription and expand the military. All who have completed service in the Nordic military service will keep their weapons and gear. Each citizen should be able to aid in the defense of the nation towards domestic as well as foreign enemies. 9. Create a state based on justice and integrity where all citizens are equal before the law. Educated attorneys should work in the legal system. A people's court should be established to put on trial grave cases of treason towards the people.
So, okay, so you guys want to build gas chambers and concentration camps then. So.
Yes, we do. I don't know if it's I don't know if the English listeners are familiar with this allemansrätt.
No, it's a pretty, that's a pretty good thing we have up in Sweden. Any of you who want to explain that to our audience, please go ahead.
Well, it's the principle of that you are allowed to walk in the forest or in non-urban areas as free as you wish, but you are not allowed, of course, to set up camps wherever you please or cut down trees and so on, but you are allowed to use the nature of Sweden and many other Nordic countries for the whole people.
Freedom
to use the forest.
But there's actually a backside to that these days, because every autumn many people from Thailand come here and pick all the berries.
Yeah,
they come back.
Right.
They drive around in buses. So.
But the law is it was made when the people were more sound and more friendly towards each and another. So maybe in these days the law doesn't work anymore.
Well, yeah, when Sweden was homogenous and it wasn't open borders, at that point it would work. Well, okay, yeah, that's really good. Now, obviously, we all know what the media, you know, tells us about what they call Nazism or Nazis, and as I said jokingly, I said, you know, they project on you that what you actually want to do is build gas chambers, kill 6 million Jews, and, you know, build concentration camps and everything else. So this this is kind of what we get out of the mainstream press. But if you could, tell us what you think National Socialism actually would look like for Sweden if it was implemented, as opposed to this Hollywood version, this stereotype idea of what this political movement that, that rose in Germany in the 30s actually was like. So what would it look like in Sweden, do you guys think?
Well, I think it would look like Sweden, a light version of it, at least would look like Sweden until the 1960s, because then we had social policies that were much taken from the Third Reich, and we also had a ethnic homogeneous people. So that was a really happy time for the Swedish people, and now when our country is going down the drain, people long back to those days, and they really don't realize that they lived in a light version of the Third Reich, you could say.
Right, right. Well, wasn't Sweden like before the 40s, before National Socialism became unfashionable? It was very much socialist, of course, but it was also nationalist inclined. It was there as a system, as a government should be, to benefit the people. It was just after, I believe, the Second World War that things of that nature started to be phased out for obvious reasons.
Yes, and I don't know, but it feels like many listeners from especially the U.S., they see they have this extreme fear of communism, and of course we don't like communism either, but or socialism, and actually the socialism in Sweden in the 60s and so on, it was healthy. I mean, people weren't able to get rich if they wanted to, but everybody had a chance in life. So I believe it's a little bit different.
Yeah, I would say it's uniquely European, but specifically Northern Europeans, that concept, that way of life. I think it actually goes back to the kind of the system that we had pre-Christianity of ting and so forth, things or stone circles. It was a tradition of letting many people, you know, decide in matters that pertain to, well, maybe not the nation at that point, but the local area and decision making and whatnot. I don't know if that's going too far. What do you guys think in terms of the pre-Christian heritage that we have and the idea of democracy?
It's the same thing, because before Christianity and as well as in the 60s in Sweden, there were this our people were one people, and almost everybody had similar goals and viewed their life in a similar way. And if a population is like that, then you can, of course, have much more freedom, and you want to help your neighbors and so on, because you are all the same. It's a decent way of living, so to speak.
Yeah, it's fair, right? Justice,
yeah,
truth.
Fair.
It's it's a sense that we have. I think it's a sense that we have innate in us, which has been exploited in these days and used against us, which I think we can see in the migrant crisis and so forth, that desire to help other people is now something that has been extended internationally, and we are being in effect exploited. Our good sense of humanity.
Our empathy has become our greatest enemy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But as Robin said, the Swedish social democrats, they stole the social politics from the Germans. And they implemented it in Sweden and call it the Swedish model, Svenska modellen. And Sweden has been hailed for this, and they think Sweden is very good for this. But it was stolen from Germany, and they don't talk much about that, especially not the Social Democrats. They think they invented it now.
Does any of you know a bit more about the economic system in Germany in the 30s and 40s? I heard, but maybe it's just hearsay, but there was an element of kind of a free market, but maybe more internally, that there was more a leeway in terms of the economy, and that there was a less restrictions under that system than it has been under social democracy in Sweden in the I don't know, you know, 70s and 80s or something like that. Does anybody know?
Yeah, you're definitely right. They made their own system completely free from the Rothschild bank system. And many people think that's maybe what's the reason why the whole world attacked Germany. in the Second World War and was against them. Because when they broke free from the Rothschild banking system, they also, of course, got more money to their own people and was able to build roads and so on in a much faster way than anyone else.
Yeah, and of course, the state in Germany, they didn't take over all the big companies. You had this Siemens and Krupp and so on. So
IG Farben.
Yeah. So it wasn't Marxism in any way. It was just that everybody, nobody was left behind in a good way.
Yeah,
and they had this working duty. Everyone who wants to study in a university was he must prove himself by working with his hands for I don't know how long time it was, half a year or 1 year or something, and live a little primitive and so on. So everyone should have this not picking on the one who did that kind of job, to erase the struggle between different kind of jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think it was, you know, if when you knew that the money was going to the right place, when it was a, you know, something that was designed to take care of your people, basically, I think there's a whole different mentality that comes with that. I mean, Germany had done an economic amazing recovery after the First World War and the Versailles Treaty and everything, the Balfour, not the Balfour Declaration, that's another thing, but the Versailles Treaty, how this was, you know, used against them. And despite this, what was it, Hjalmar Schacht and a couple of other that were kind of part of reforming the German economy, and it was just a miracle, really, the way they got themselves out of that situation.
Yes, it was.
Like you said, with taxes, it's the of course, if you like the system and if it's very positive and so on, you do wish to help it, of course, and it's like with a family. You do want to help your family, invest in your family and so on. So it's the same thing with this National Socialism.
Yeah, in the current, in Sweden these days, you don't feel comfortable paying tax at all, because now we have these refugee centers where our tax money go to, because it's privatized. So it's like these super capitalists that get all our tax money because the state funds these asylum centers.
Yeah, right. And the state, of course, is our enemy. This system we live in, they actively murder the white people in Sweden, for instance. So, of course, you don't want to finance a system like that. It's almost treason.
Yes.
To your own people.
Explain that a bit more, Emil, if you can.
Well, our system, our government, fills up our nation with non-whites. They mock our history and our culture. They say that everybody can be Swedes and so on. They have campaigns where you should welcome immigrants to your homes and so on and so on. So the function of a state, of course, is to take care of its own people. And our state do the opposite. It try to erase us from the history. So this is our enemy, the enemy of the Swedes. And it must go away, or else we will die out. That's certain.
We're economic slaves, you could say.
Yeah.
Because we're financing... we are pushed to finance this murder of our own people.
Yeah, I mean, let's look at South Africa. They at least were a little bit tougher than the average Swede. So I believe it will go much quicker here. And quicker than South Africa, that's not nice at all.
No.
No.
Of course, we will change this, but
yeah,
it's a quite bad situation.
Well, just for our international audience who, I mean, we've spent a good deal of time speaking about Sweden and what is happening there, but for, you know, potential newcomers who haven't heard too much about this before, a few examples that we could make about this is, of course, for example, our ex-Prime Minister, at the time. I think it was pre the last election. He was basically talking about how Swedes need to open their heart. There's basically going to be no money left over for anything else except trying to take care of these incoming invaders. And he was quite open about this. It was remarkable the type of language he used.
He's insane. Fredrik Reinfeldt is his name. I believe he's a Mischlinger, isn't he? Isn't he a mixed background?
He
wrote this. He sat in an airplane and looked down at Sweden and said that, oh, this is a very, very, very big country, so we can just fill it up.
Cut down the forest.
So complete insane. And we had this other minister, Helene Annie Lööf. She said that Sweden have the capacity to take in 40 million immigrants. Because she had also looked at this map or something and seen that Sweden is quite a big country. But there are only about 7 million whites or something here.
And this person always go around with this maniac look and sectic smile. So she must be really insane.
Yeah, but they are just parrots for the Zionists.
Yes.
They just say what they are told to say. But it's so insane.
And I wonder if they even know who controls them. I don't think they do, many of them, to be honest.
No, I guess not. But the ones who do obviously don't care. So,
all of our prime ministers has been to the Bilderberg meetings, I think, for the last at least 10 years, maybe 20.
Yeah.
There they team up with these Jewish oligarchs that own all the media in Sweden. We got Bonniers, Schibsted, that is owned by American Jewish banks, and we got Jörgen. There are three major plays, all Jewish. So these Jews go to the Bilderberg meetings with our prime ministers.
Yeah, and another example is that the Swedish state has borrowed money from, correct me if I'm wrong, Per, Solomon Brothers. Isn't that true?
Yes.
And the, what's it called? The secrecy of this agreement. The agreement is in secret.
Yes. It's top classified. You are not allowed as a citizen of Sweden to get the contract of under which circumstances we have borrowed money from these bankers. Maybe they have political
leverage over us.
Yes.
Over the politicians.
Yeah, they
when
have
was this? When were we indebted to them? Do you know?
It was actually quite a long time ago. But we have tried to get this contract, but it's classified.
Huh. All right.
So it's quite interesting. And they're still lending money to pay for this mass immigration now. So our children and grandchildren are going to pay, not only that they have to live in Mordor, they have to pay for it for a long, long time in the future.
Yeah.
So that's how our politicians works. It's horrible. And they have even made other stupid things. They have, in our constitution, they have changed the constitution. So in our constitution, it's now written that we are a multicultural society.
Yeah.
And they have also written in the constitution that we are a member of the EU.
Remarkable. Yeah,
and that's also why write it in the constitution? Why?
Yeah,
because they were forced to do it. Because of course,
if the European Union go rogue and completely maniac, we can't go out as a member, because in our constitution we have written that we are a member of European Union.
Well, they change, don't they? Change. I mean, they call it. It's not really a constitution. It's Grundlag, a foundational law structure.
Yes.
And it does change all the time. To be honest, this could be rewritten by any party who gets in there, as far as I know.
Yeah, but it's not completely. It's not easy to actually change it. It must be two elections before they can change it.
Okay. Well, what happened with the environment? I mean, look at how responsible Sweden used to be, right? And this idea that we can take in everybody, they can live a Western prospering life that we've had, etc. I mean, it's really the conservatives, the economic liberals for the Americans. It's a different type of liberal that we have in Sweden. They're when we say liberal in Sweden, we mean more on an economic level, that they're, you know, more so-called free market, etc. But Reinfeldt and the moderate party, which is our version of the conservatives, they've really spearheaded this. They've really turned everything around in Sweden over an eight-year period, remarkably, specifically when it comes to the making Sweden multicultural. It was yes, it was bad before under social democracy or whatever, but it's really the conservatives, right, the so-called conservatives, that really have ruined Sweden more than any other political, affiliation in Sweden. Would you guys agree?
Yes, I would agree. And it, actually, it's a similar pattern in some other countries as well. I spoke to a Hungarian, and he said the same, that when the conservatives took over, it was a much, much harder time for nationalists, and they allowed more immigrants. I don't know, maybe they want cheap labor or something, but they are, yeah.
They have taken away the self-dependence from the local regions. I don't know the translation, but so the local regions cannot say no to new asylum homes. And all these asylum homes can now be privatized. So it's like a corporatistic society where people pay taxes to the big to corporations.
Isn't that what it's just a tangent here, guys, but isn't that, I hear that all the time from like people in the alternative media and stuff like that, that's actually what fascism is, right? That the corporations
yes.
own the government or whatever. I thought it was the other way around, though. That's actually when the government owns the corporation, not the, when the corporations own the government. But
well, yeah. It's the economic system of the fascism.
And it's even worse, Robin. The local communities are not allowed to have this home for immigrants.
Mm.
They're not allowed to compete with private companies.
Yes, and all those changes were made by the moderates, the so-called conservatives / liberals, so to say. So it was
yes.
the right-wing forces that did this, and that they want to smash the welfare state and privatize state business.
And the city councils cannot do anything about this. They're just overrun by this Migrationsverket.
Yeah, the migration agency. Yeah.
Yes.
So it's really, what's happened over the years is that it's been further and further centralized. We've gotten bigger and bigger units. Now, of course, on top of it, we do have the European Union as yet another overarching hand of the elitists and the globalists that have also forced a lot of people a lot of countries in the European Union to accept migrants, right? This is what they're talking about. That they're enforcing even countries. We've spoken with politicians in Estonia, and I know it's happening in Lithuania and stuff like that too. We're very, very poor countries compared to the somewhat okay economy of Sweden. But this is what the European Union does. They force upon us things that we have never gotten to vote on or never gotten to have a say in any regard at all.
Mm.
Yes.
And I think that Sweden is probably screwed because there's too much tension now. And an interesting thing is that NATO actually trained against civil unrest in the southern Sweden. So NATO is preparing for civil unrest in Sweden, or at least doing exercises.
Yeah, they know. I think they know.
Yeah.
But of course, like you said about Lithuania and the Baltic states, the goal with the European Union, because we know who runs the show, they do not want whites to live on this planet. They wish to mix us up. So this is of course there are economical parts about this, but it's also religious and racial. This
yeah.
is a war on whites.
Yeah, it's a race war, of course.
Yes.
And this Zionist elite, of course, feel a threat in the
yeah.
white race.
Yeah, because we are the most, how do you say it? Potent rival or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, right,
mm-hmm.
right. And they erase it with biology warfare.
It's the ultimate thing to do is to never have to see a nation like Germany rise again.
Yeah,
it's not reversible.
Mm.
You guys have heard of Richard Coudenhove-Kalergi, of course, the pan-European movement initiator. He did it together with the Habsburg, but he was very prominent in pointing out the fact that he saw a kind of a moral supremacy within the Jewish people, right? He was talking about how they were basically going to be the they're going to be running the show, basically. That's what he said in his book, Practical Idealism. And he spoke very openly about the fact that he wanted to see a Europe which is very mixed. He talked about the Eurasian Negroid race or something like that. I forget the exact quote now, but we've mentioned it many times in the program. So is that the underlying still, the underlying ideology that actually permeates the European Union, do you think?
I believe so. Yeah, definitely. And the Kalergi, of course, he was also of a mixed, he was a race-mixed person. But I believe him to be just like the Swedish politician. He just repeats what the Zionists have told him. Because the Jews seldom, you know, front things by themselves. So I just believe that he was, he just worked for them.
Yeah, and these traitors always get rewarded for it. The one you mentioned here, Reinfeldt, I think he got a really good job after he was prime minister.
What does he do now?
He started to work on a bank, didn't he?
Yeah. After he served the youth, and also his finance minister got some top job on a bank or something.
Anders Borg, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I'd say in Sweden it's true that we have less idea of maybe who really runs things. I mean, we have a very big problem with Islam in Sweden. There's more mosques than temples dedicated to our own ancient heritage, for example. Well, there isn't any temples as far as I know, which is horrible, you know, ridiculous. But despite the fact that the temple that we actually had in Uppsala was, you know, the central one. It was really in Sweden where this religion was, if we can call it religion, was centered. But anyway, my point that I wanted to get to is it's more difficult maybe in the environment in Sweden in talking about the things that you guys are talking about. Although it makes sense, you have to be able to lay things out and structure them in such a way. But one advantage that we have now to be able to bring attention to some of these things that we were talking about is, of course, that we have it's so bad with the Muslim immigration that this is something you can point to because it's something that the average Swede can see right in front of their eyes. But when you begin to speak about Zionist power and these kinds of things, it's very easy that it just glosses over and they just kind of misses. It just misses the target completely. But do you guys see that the immigration issue and particularly the Muslim issue is something that we can use to our advantage to try to bring attention to some of these things? Because I think eventually down the road, if people open their eyes to what's happening, they will at some point ask themselves the question, well, who did this to Sweden, right? Why did it happen? I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but is there a problematic issue of either addressing the JQ or the Muslim issue? Is there a divide here, according to you guys?
Of course, we can point out the problem more when we have this in our near as neighbors and so on. But also the Sweden Democrats, which is the biggest Swedish national party, is influenced and infiltrated by Zionists. And they, of course, have another propaganda. They talk about this Muslim problem and talk about Israel as a friend. And see, Israel also have problem with these Muslims and so on. So some Swedes get confused by that. But, of course, if you get a chance to talk to them and get a chance to show them in history how the Zionists' propaganda was, even in the 60s, to make Sweden a multicultural land, then you can convince Swedes to see who's to blame for the situation. But it takes that they can free their mind a bit, because Sweden must be one of the most brainwashed people on the earth. Sometimes yeah, I think so, yeah. Because we are so, we have this empathy, and they have really massive brainwashed us with this propaganda from when we were small children. And it's one of few countries that every citizen almost like to talk about how bad our how bad a Swede is. They don't talk about their own people in with proud. They talk about our that we are shy and a little stupid and not as good as the other people and so on. So we are massively brainwashed to hate ourselves and to love the Zionists.
And one must understand that this is, of course, like Per said, it's because of propaganda, because this is not a natural state. No other race on this earth act like this. They are, all other races, except the whites, and the whites in Sweden in particular, all other races, they are proud of their heritage and their culture and so on. And that's the natural state. So this is a proof that we act like this mad organism who had been attacked by a parasite and have changed their ways completely.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. It's quite horrific, actually.
Like a zombie snail.
Yeah, like a zombie snail. People know what it is.
Google that word and you can see
zombies. Amazing. All right, nice.
The alternative media is going up. You know, we got one site called friatider.se, and they got 1.6 million visitors a month, and we at Nordfront.se, we got 340,000 visitors. So I think that
unique visitors every month.
Yeah, and it's quite big in a country like Sweden.
Yes.
Yes. So our numbers go up all the time. So people are not trusting the media. There are polls done proving that our media is not trusted at all by the people. And I also think that it's a radicalization process. First they go like counter jihad. They focus on the Muslims. But then they also start to read our website, and we speak about who owns the media, who owns the banks and stuff like that. And then they put puzzle in their head, and then they start to see the whole picture. You get stories like that all the time.
And like you said, Robin, and as well for me, we started a reaction against multiculturalism when we were young, and now people can see where that has taken us. So people do this all the time.
Absolutely. Well, gentlemen, I'm going to speak more in the second half about, you know, who owns the media in Sweden, what will happen in Sweden, how things are going to unfold. We need to address largely how things are there today to our international audience that might not have an idea of what actually is going on in Sweden. So we have much more to cover. But in the last few minutes here in the first segment, let's just give out some of the details of websites, if we have Swedish listeners with us, how they can listen to your radio show, etc. And anything else, really, that you want to mention, either how people can help you guys out in the struggle, if they can, you know, connect with you, let's say if they want to, I don't know, start a branch where they are. You mentioned you don't have anything in Denmark yet, for example. So give us the details, gentlemen.
That's your job, Robin.
if they want to listen to our show, you just go to nordfront.se, and then you click on the radio tab, and then you get all our episodes. We don't have so many podcasts in English, but we have interviewed Professor Kevin MacDonald, for instance, and our Swedish listeners could, of course, listen to all the shows. We actually interviewed a person from Iceland recently, and that interview was done in English, and people who want to help out should apply for membership. You could always help us anonymously also if you want to help with the Nordfront.se to edit it or something like that, or you can become an activist that
actually there have been a couple of many from United States and England have contacted us and have wished to organize a branch of our organization in their countries. And we don't say that it is impossible, but Right now, it is impossible because we must, you know, have a foothold and know the guys and so on. But of course, we don't have any rules against building a movement outside of the north, but it's not prioritized right now.
Right.
Oh, of course, a bigger goal is to save the whole white world.
Yes.
And the whole world, actually. We don't hate other races or something like that.
Speak for yourself. But also, we need all help we can get. We just have to face the facts. We are a dying nation, and we need all help we can get.
The best support is to move here.
Yeah.
Take your things and move to Sweden. It's here the revolution starts.
The race war will begin in Sweden.
Yes.
If you're looking for that kind of stuff, Sweden is the place
move
to
here.
Go.
And you know, it's easy to get a citizenship here. It's just some shoe cream in the face and
just walk right
say
in.
Say that you're from Afghanistan or something,
yeah,
and
true.
That you're a child. It doesn't matter which age or how much beard you have
keep
in your face.
Beard, you keep your beard.
It's also very easy to find an enemy if you're into this race war stuff, because they are everywhere.
Yes.
So, yeah, Sweden is the place.
Actually, the immigration authorities, they said that if the person looks younger than 40, then you don't question his age.
Wonderful. That's excellent. All right.
That's true, the thing Robin said.
They actually said it. Official. Yeah.
Well, maybe there's tons of, you know, Swedes that went to like Minnesota and stuff. And I mean, if Sweden really was genuine about that, why didn't they extend about, you know, work, the need for, you know, work to come to Sweden, etc., employment and things like that? Why didn't they reach out to those people, right? And say, actually, you know what, if you want to come back, if your family came from Sweden, you're welcome back, you know. But they, obviously, we know what's going on. They're not sincere about this. But one of the items I want to speak more about in the second is activism. But I do, before we break, want to speak about May 1st. Tell us what's happening and tell us how people can get involved in that.
Yeah, we have a big rally in a town called Borlänge in Dalarna in Sweden. Massive demonstration. With the parole is that we are the true, Emil, you know the parole.
Against traitors and against the finance mafia.
Finance elite.
The traitors of Sweden and against the financial elite.
And we want to show people that we are the true alternative for Swedish workers and for Swedish citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole of the establishment is mobilizing towards it. We got two ministers that is coming to the counter-demonstration.
Yeah, the Minister of Defense. And what was the other one?
She's not a minister. She's just
a listener.
Maniac.
She's a shape-shifting listener.
Yes. No, her title is actually, listen to this title, it's quite Orwell title. The National Coordinator for Protecting Democracy Against Violent Extremism.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
All right. And she's been on the Bilderberg, that one also.
And she has a 10-person staff that work for her. And all the time they work to make things bad for us and so on.
Oh, boy. So people can obviously join in May 1st there. Can they get a hold of you or find more information on the website specifically about that if they're Swedish speaking?
Yes.
All right.
We have banners and articles. We write articles about this quite frequent right now.
Yes, and I think we're actually going to release an English press release too to some English spoken media.
Okay, yeah. All right, very good. We'll have a link up to that, of course, in terms of what's happening May 1st in Borlänge in Sweden, in the struggle against big finance and traders, so that people can find out more information. Well, I hope you guys are staying safe and that things will be all right there, of course. Do you guys expect it to be, you know, a big rally against you guys? What's your expectations of this thing?
The Swedish communists actually mobilizing for it. They try to gather people to go against us, but I don't think they will have any luck in this.
The locals in that area of Sweden is very they're very angry of the current situation.
Mm-hmm.
So they could be very positive towards us. So that's why they're, you know, shipping in counter demonstrations from other places.
Yeah, and if you are this, what's it called in English, blue collar working man,
mm-hmm.
is that the term?
Yeah.
Why in the whole world should you join the Social Democrats or the Communists in their march when these parties fill our country with people who will then
lower wages, take your jobs, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's the same thing
compete
in America.
With them, compete with them in the factories and so on. It's complete madness to join them.
Yeah. Well, it's the same in America with Bernie Sanders, right? It's like he's for open borders, but he's talking about American jobs. It's a complete contradiction.
yes.
Yeah.
It is. But Henrik, you have this fancy technical stuff. You go there and send live from it.
From Borlänge, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, well, but it's a good idea. Actually, in the future, it is a good idea. Actually, May 1st, let me just look at the... Okay, so it's the day after we're doing our live... our big
cancel
live
it.
Thing. Well, cancel you know what we can't... no, but what we can do is the day after... is if any of you guys actually want to patch in to us through, if you have a cell phone on Skype and if the reception is good, talk with us right there on the spot. That would be really cool, actually.
We can manage it if you want.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that in the after the show, and we'll set that up. That's very, very good. So we'll hopefully we can cover that on the website in more detail then. But okay, ladies and gentlemen, Nordfront.se is the website. Go there to find out more. We'll continue, of course, in the second segment with much more with our three gentlemen with us here. So stay tuned, everybody. We'll be right back after the break. Well, as we proceed with a second hour, much more is coming up with the guys from the Nordic Resistance Movement. In the members' half, we'll get into the static and consistent attacks that the Nordic Resistance Movement have received from the leftist-controlled, state-subsidized press in Sweden. And the guys give a clear picture about the absurd hate speech laws that are used to make political prisoners out of activists endorsing socialist nationalism. We discuss the Freemasonic flavor of the courts, the Wallenberg banking family, and the incestuous relationship with the political establishment and the media. Then we weigh up the many ways multiculturalism is eroding the most vulnerable populations of Sweden, along with the special allowances provided to immigrants and the evil entrepreneurs who are profiting from this invasion. The fellows talk about the strategies of the movement and what they're doing to awaken, organize, and mobilize the citizens of Sweden to counter this very grim situation. Don't miss it. It's an interesting continuation. Go to redicemembers.com and sign up. Try it out for a three-month subscription. Friend or foe, supporter or detractor, I think you'll find a lot of interesting things in the archives for you. We have over 10 years of shows waiting for you in the vault. We have gone through a lot of different topics over the years, and I'm sure you'll find something that is of interest to you. But more currently, we are fighting against the globalists and their attack on and displacement of European peoples. I guess you could call it one of the, mostly quiet genocides in history, excluding the loud push by the cultural Marxists to have it implemented, of course. We'll be right back after the break. Thank you so much for staying with us. Don't forget about our live show coming up Saturday, April 30th. We'll see you then, but we'll be back before then with much more Red Ice Radio. We'll pick up right after the break.